CNN Radio Special Report, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Hurricane Irene is blowing through New York City. The East River is topping the wall in Lower Manhattan. The eye of the storm is about 50 miles south of the city right now. CNN meteorologist Rob Marciano is at Long Beach, New York, where he says conditions are pretty rough.
We are seeing the full brunt of Hurricane Irene right now slam into Long Beach, Long Island, Nassau and Suffolk counties, over a quarter million people right now without power. But what we're seeing here, right here on the beach, is a huge surf and a huge storm surge that is just battering the shoreline.
There are also reports of serious flooding in Brooklyn. The storm has knocked out power to over 3 million people total. One of them is CNN's Bob Costantini, who joins us live now from Baltimore. Bob.
Well, Bill, here along the waterfront, sandbags weren't needed for businesses. Irene produced heavy rain, but the storm surge was not as severe as predicted for tributaries of Chesapeake Bay. There are downed trees and branches everywhere, though. In Maryland, 700,000 homes and businesses are without power. Rain letting up, winds diminishing, people are out walking. Everybody breathing a sigh of relief. It wasn't worse. Bill?
And Irene is barely hanging on to hurricane status with top sustained winds now 75 miles per hour. CNN's Athena Jones reports from Alexandria, Virginia, where she says there's been no major flooding, but there are other problems.
In Virginia at large, there are about a million customers without power. There have been three fatalities in the region, in Chesterfield County, New Brunswick County, and Newport News, all from falling trees.
11 deaths are now blamed on Hurricane Irene. There was a second landfall in Little Egg Inlet, New Jersey, this morning. It originally made landfall along the North Carolina Outer Banks on Saturday. This is a special report from CNN Radio.
The Home Depot guarantees that you pay the lowest total price on carpet, pad, and installation. Plus, you can get special financing. So you get the beautiful new carpet you've been waiting for, you get lifetime stain and installation warranties, and you save money every step of the way. So, bottom line, you won't find a better bottom line anywhere else with the lowest total price on carpet, pad, and installation guaranteed. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. U.S. only. See store for details.
Need cash? Sell unwanted gold and diamond jewelry to Empire Diamond. Call 1-800-728-3425. In the Empire State Building since 1931 and a reputable Better Business Bureau member, Empire is paying the highest prices ever. The time to sell is now. Empire Diamond offers the highest cash prices without any pressure. Don't wait for gold prices to drop. Call 1-800-728-3425. That's 1-800-728-3425. Or visit EmpireDiamond.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, Spencer Mahoney, Regional Director, Southeast U.S. of the U.K. Trade and Investment Arm of the British government. He's going to tell us how to do business in the U.K. and how he can help you do that. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store. Tourneau. The Fashion Center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, Michael Ankuma of the Bank of America and Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney. We've got a fantastic lineup of guests for you today, including Debbie Ritchie, Chief Financial Officer, and Paul McQuillan, Executive Vice President of Business Development, both with AT Solutions. We've also got Nat Calkins, Founder and CEO of Appian Corporation, Scott Gassay, Founder and CEO of FG. GM, and Amanda Hollins, co-founder, president, and chief financial officer of Constellation Software Engineering. Let's get started. I'd like you to meet our first guests, Debbie Ritchie and Paul McQuillan, both of AT Solutions. Welcome, Debbie. Welcome, Paul.
Hello.
And
hello.
Would one of you tell us, what is AT Solutions?
AT Solutions is a government contractor that specializes in counterterrorism solutions. We do both training and we offer products. And we have about 650 employees.
Well, what does counterterrorism mean?
Counterterrorism is everything associated with protecting us against terrorist acts. So if there's terrorists out there trying to put either training in place that helps us prevent, you know, terrorists from attacking us.
Okay. Can you give us an example?
Sure. We do training. For example, we'll do training for bomb squads in different cities with law enforcement to train them and, you know, how to react to a bomb threat and things like that.
Do you personally know how to do that?
No, I don't. I'm learning as we go. Actually, I did attend one training that we had with the National Guard. I went down there, and actually what we do in some cases is we do a lot of training of like IEDs, what IEDs
yes.
are. And I went to the training, and I learned actually how to wire an IED, because in order to, you know, take one apart, you need
wow.
to know how to put one together. So
wow.
I did attend.
I bet you can brag about that.
It was a lot of fun.
How big or small? Is AT Solutions?
We have 650 employees, and we're growing very rapidly. We grew about 28% last year.
And the company's been around for how long?
It was founded in 2002.
Okay. And you're the chief financial officer. You've only been in that position here for a year.
That's correct.
What did they see in you that made AT Solutions say, we've got to have Debbie?
I think, you know, we knew a lot of the same people before, and I think it was attitude. A little bit, you know, we're a rapidly growing organization, and they needed somebody that, you know, works at a pace and could handle a lot of a frequently changing environment.
But what kind of attitude?
Positive, very positive attitude, driven, and, you know, likes change, likes to go into work and see different things happening.
So to you, positive attitude means what? Don't worry, be happy, or is
no,
it
just means I'm a financial officer, so I'm pretty, you know, pretty conservative by nature. But at the same time, you know, there's things can happen. I think, you know, if you're a financial officer, a lot of times you get deemed, you know, you see the glass half empty all the time. Well, I don't see the glass half empty, but I see, you know, there's potential for it to go empty, but we need to address it and work with it, and there's a positive way to handle that.
In what way did your growing up, and especially with your family, influence you to either be conservative or a glass half full person? Tell us about that.
I grew up in Connecticut, and with a family, I had five brothers and sisters, and I had, my father was a steel worker, and my mother stayed at home and watched the kids. And I kind of had the best, I think I represent the best of both my parents' characteristics. My father was hardworking, driven, worked two shifts a day in a steel factory. And my mother was a fun-loving, crazy person with, I would say, really new people. Great interpersonal skills, a lot of fun, great sense of humor, and just did some crazy fun things.
So when we think of a steel worker, we think mm-hmm. of, you know, a man of few words, strong, manly man, you know, mm-hmm. conservative guy. Is that describe your dad?
Yeah, he ran shifts in the plant that he worked in. And, I would say pretty tough guy. Actually, when he passed away, a number of people came to the funeral that worked for my father. and came back and said, you know, your father was one of the toughest, you know, toughest people to work forever. Yeah. He's like, you know, the day he retired, things just started to slip away.
But he did not marry a woman just like him. Is that correct?
No, opposites. True opposites. Yeah, she was, you know, somewhat younger and just a lot of fun. Just, a, you know, fun-loving, great attitude.
You're vibrant. You're in the Homeland Security, counterterrorism. To me, those are totally opposites.
It is. When you're talking about security, it is a little bit different. But when you talk about being a good employer and a good place to work, I think vibrance is critical. And to be able to deal with change. Some people that, you know, part of my being vibrant is that I like when things change or different things or different, you know, different employees, different companies and things like that. So
yeah, that's an interesting point, Ed, about this distinction. So you're in Homeland Security, yet you said that growing up you never locked your doors.
Yeah, we did. We did say that. Where I grew up, we were, you know, we lived in a place where we just, today, actually my brother lives in the house that I grew up in. And we still don't lock the doors because, you know, we feel safe and we just, you know.
Let's get back to your mom for a moment because you just sort of touched on your mom. But what would be an example of your mom having, at the very least, a positive attitude, if not an outgoing kind of lady?
She was, you know, she got married very young. And when she worked, she actually worked in a department store and she worked in the fur department. And she would, you know, one, she would dye her hair all different colors to the point that we never knew what color her hair was because she was always changing it from blonde to dark to red, just, you know, with the seasons. And then she would also, when she worked in the fur department, she would borrow the fur coats and go out downtown and go out to lunch and, you know, lunch at different places in these different exotic fur coats. So she's just crazy.
How did that play in a steel town with the manly steel worker husband?
I think, well, my father had great admiration for my mother because she was someone you would admire. She just didn't take herself too seriously. And I think from his, you know, he worked very hard and took things very seriously.
Well, you're an accountant, and you mentioned your father put, I think, five brothers and sisters through college. But you're in accounting. Did he push you to numbers? Or many times the traditional way was the daughters went to something like nursing or teaching?
Not at all. Actually, if I go through my family, we had a number of teachers. My oldest sister was a high school teacher, English teacher. I have one sister that's an attorney. I went into business because I liked business on my own. He pushed us to make sure we all went to college. And then when I graduated, I started my career with KPMG. And the one advice he gave me when I went to college, when I started work, which I always found very interesting, was at KPMG, you know, there's busy seasons and you work a lot of hours and stuff. And then you'd bank your hours. And he said to me, and I was 22 years old, he's like, that is a great program. Every time they ask you to work, you just keep working. You work and work and work. And I thought it was really, I always remember him saying that to me. I always remember that, yeah, that little tip. So,
Paul, you've been sitting here so patiently. Well, let's get to the heart of the matter of your story. Did your mom dye her hair crazy colors?
Oh, no, she didn't.
Tell us about your upbringing.
Yeah, sure. Both my parents grew up in Brooklyn. My mom's dad was a longshoreman. My dad owned his own company, doing sales out of his car. You know, so but not a lot of money. You know, folks living, you know, in within their means, and couldn't afford sending anybody to college. So my dad actually went to night school. He got a job with a telephone company. Bell, the Bell system, as you used to call it, and stuff, and started up there. Been went to 10 years and got a his master's degree, and from there, you know, raised a family and got three brother, two siblings, brother and a sister, and my mom did not graduate from high school, but she became actually working in accounting and just loved numbers over the years and ran a couple businesses over the years. So they just themselves taught us, you know, that you can do almost anything.
Among your buddies growing up in their families, did their father do the same thing?
Very much so. I mean, my closest friend, his father came from Italy, started a stonemason business in the area, and turned it over to his son and grew the business into one of the largest stonemason companies in the D.C. area here. So you're absolutely right. It taught him the foundation of pulling together a business.
Well, you've only worked together a year, but you have similar personalities and are vibrant together. How did that come about?
I would say probably more we're East Coast folks. We call each other by our last name, Richie McQuillan. We have offices next to each other. We have good bantering back and forth, lots of experience, international experience, business experience. We've both been with a couple of companies through our careers for the challenge, for the difference, for the cultural differences too. It's been a lot of fun.
Having the two of you working closely together, what sort of a benefit does that provide AT Solutions?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the company point of view, I mean, it's great that we can work together. I can tell Paul, and I don't take a straight financial role in something. I'll be like, the other day he was going to a trade show, and I was like, Paul, is that the best show you can go to? I mean, you know, just kind of ask these questions. I don't really know the answer, but
it was
learning.
Paul, or was it McQuillan?
That's right.
You know, Debbie, I want to come back to just one final story in your upbringing, and it involves your brother, because I know that had been a big impact. Tell us about your brother.
Sure. When I was in college, my older brother, he was 5 years older than me.
And his name?
His name is Michael, and he didn't go to college. He was actually an iron worker, and there was a very large snowstorm in Connecticut, and he got in a terrible accident, and his leg got crushed. He lost the leg, and I was destroyed. I was just devastated, and I was like, you know, what's he going to do? What's he going to do with his life? And, you know, what he ended up doing is... he went back to college. He basically went to Georgetown, went on to get, he has a degree from Oxford. He went to, you know, Breadloaf University. And he's, you know, and at that point in time, whenever I think about it, when he had the accident, I was so worried about him. Like, how could he do, how is he going to survive? What's he going to do? And when I look back on it, and it was like one of the better things that probably ever happened. Again, being positive, one of the better things that probably happened in his life. It changed his whole life.
How did it change you? In a few words, how did it change you?
I think, you know, at the time, even now, I still get upset about it. It happened so many years ago. But, you know, I learned that no matter what happens, you know, if it's illness or something along those lines, you can always, you know, with good family and, you know, good, you can always overcome it. And there's always something positive that comes to these things.
Yeah. Thank you, Debbie. Paul, would you give us the web address for AT Solutions?
www.a-tsolutions.com.
That's simple. Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Debbie Ritchie, the Chief Financial Officer, and Paul McQuillan, the Executive Vice President for Business Development of AT Solutions. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Michael Ancuma of the Bank of America, as well as Ed Alera of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is...
McKenna Henry of Smart CEO Magazine.
McKenna, what is Smart CEO Magazine?
Smart CEO Magazine is a regional publication that aims to inspire, motivate, and educate mid-Atlantic CEOs.
And what else should we know about the magazine?
Smart CEO reaches 45,000 CEOs in the mid-Atlantic with three distinct publications in Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. areas.
But you're here to talk about something very specific and special that Smart CEO is doing soon.
I am, Mike. Yes, the annual G3 Growth Conference will be hosted on November 10th at the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C.
Who should be there?
Everyone up and down the Mid-Atlantic who is leading their business, all chief executives, CXOs of Mid-Atlantic businesses looking to grow their companies.
And the takeaway will be what?
C-level executives who attend will hear from noted authors, well-respected national CEOs and industry experts, and will take away new insights and actionable items to apply to their businesses.
Now, you call this a conference. How is this different than the Smart CEO events that most of us attend each month?
Smart CEO is known for our awards events where we will profile and recognize CEOs based on their leadership. However, the G3 Growth Conference is much more of an informational platform where C-level executives will learn new insights and take away items to apply.
Can you give us the date and the location again, please?
Sure. It is November the 10th, 2011, at the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C.
We've been speaking with McKenna Henry of Smart CEO Magazine and the G3 Conference. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, Michael Ankuma of Bank of America and Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan Ingersoll & Rooney. And I'd like to introduce to you our next guest, Matt Calkins, founder and CEO of Appian Corporation. Matt, welcome to the show. And what is Appian Corporation?
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. Appian Corporation is a software company. We're a platform for writing applications inside an enterprise. For example, when an organization does something like hire people, there's a lot of steps involved. There's a lot of logic involved, from doing the interviews to making the offer to doing a background check. All those things need to be ordered, done in process, done in a distinctive way that preserves the competitive advantage of that organization. We allow you to automate it in a flexible and efficient way to do that.
So the way you just said that seems crystal clear to you. Do you just have a crystal clear logical mind, or did you learn how to do this?
I love logic. I love rules. I play board games competitively, and I write them, and rules come naturally to me.
I'm not surprised. There's just something about you that communicates that. How big or small is Appian?
175 people, roughly.
And the company's been around for how long?
12 years.
And it says you're the founder. Why did you found a company?
I was working at a company. I was working at MicroStrategy, and I loved it. Out of college, I was there for most of the 90s, and I was having a great impact, and I was making money. I had a couple $1 million in options, and I walked away from that in order to start Appian. The reason I did that is I felt that I wanted to have a cultural and an ethical impact, and I could only do that by being the CEO of my own organization.
Okay, so we're going to come back to cultural and ethical impact for a moment. But you signed away something when you started this company, Appian. Tell us that story.
It was about $2.5 million. Yeah, it was in options. And actually, within 6 months after I left, that had gone up to $10 million that I'd signed away. And I had people calling me back, old friends from MicroStrategy, saying you should have left sooner. The stock's going great. Why did you leave? It was an interesting moment. I didn't regret it, actually. I never regretted it, even when I got up to $10 million, because I knew that by steering my own boat, I was fulfilling what I thought my career ought to be.
Well, you didn't just walk away from multi-millions in options. You also achieved something there at a young age. Tell us about that.
It was very important to me to create an institution. You know, if Appian ever expires, if for some reason Appian stops, it's bought, it goes public, someone else owns it, on that last day, I won't measure Appian according to its value. I'm going to measure it according to the sum of its externalities, you know, all the impact that it's had on our constituents and the people who surround it and the partners and the clients who depended on us. That is terribly important to me. And I wanted to run a business such that I could care about that.
At the ripe old age of 26?
26.
Wow. Let's come back to this cultural and ethical impact. What does that mean?
That means that I care about all the things that don't add up on a balance sheet, right?
Such as?
I care about the progress we've made in every one of our employees' careers. For example, I want them to have the great kind of experience that I had, lots of responsibility, maybe a little bit more than they deserve, right? Respect for their opinion, ability to offer their thoughts and participate across the boundaries of departments and over to their friend.
When did that arise in you? Where did that come from?
I have always wanted to run my own organization. I ran a couple of them in college. I was the editor of a school paper, and I ran a political organization in college, and I loved it, and I knew coming out of school that I wanted to run something.
Tell us about Mom and Dad and whatever impact they had on your business career.
They both had an enormous impact, actually. You know, every day I was in college, my mother wrote me a letter. Every day.
Every single
That's right.
day.
And family was precious to me growing up. And I think I brought that to Appian. Family, Appian is a family, and I've tried to treat it with the same kind of care.
What would Mom say every day?
Well, I would. Furthermore, it was two pages usually. I was front and back. I mean, she would tell me every little thing that had gone on around the house and what the pets were doing and where they'd been. And I mean, it's remarkable the way she can fill two pages. I can hardly fill one when I'm writing to somebody.
Most college guys would hate getting that letter every day.
What about you? I loved it, actually. As I say, family is so important to me. And it just reminded me that though I was far away, that the family was still critical.
So, Matt, question for you is that the family thing, or maybe a two-part question. How early did you realize you wanted to run your own ship? Was that at 7 years old, at 10? Was that early on? Because you obviously had it in college, but it had to have come from an earlier time.
Yeah, I think I've always been really confident, and I thought that the natural result of believing in yourself was that you would take on the maximum amount of responsibility. So I think throughout my career and even before I went to college, I've always been thinking that I should maximize my responsibility.
And the second part of the question is the family connection. Was the close bond because you did more with family than see other friends go out and throw a baseball, or did you do a lot, like I said, with a sibling or parent, which is what bonded the family so close together?
Oh, we were a very close family growing up. We would go on vacations together. We traveled a lot. And when we did, my father, who was a real estate developer, would show us buildings he was working on or buildings he knew about. And he'd really treat me to a view of the business side of those buildings. We'd appraise the marble or look at the fountain or talk about whether it was a Class A or Class B space. And I grew up seeing the good and the bad, the hardball, and the judgment involved in being a real estate developer. And that was my first big glimpse into business, and it fascinated me.
What was the good that you saw? The things that appealed to you?
The building matters to people. When you finish building a building, it's not ambiguous as to whether you've done something good, provided it's a decent building, it doesn't fall over. You've made a home for people. You've made an office for people. You've made a tasteful experience that they can live every day. It's a contribution to the city, to the community, and to the employees and the people who live in it.
You saw all that at 7 years old?
I did. I was very young. This happened throughout my childhood, and I loved Dad's business. And sometimes I would even go to work with him and hang out and look at those big blue maps. The architects reported to him, so I would see those big architectural sketches. To this day, I love architecture.
Was there anything that maybe scared you or intimidated you, maybe some of the hardball business things that went on?
Yeah, I remember once he had a bonus that was predicated on getting a certain other person out of the deal. Right, it was just a personal bonus just to evict this other person from the deal. And my father, always such a nice guy. So I figured that if he can deal with a hardball business, then so can I. And I've always grown up as a really nice guy too, just like my dad. And that taught me that that nice guys don't have to finish last.
You deal with a wide spectrum of companies and the government.
Yes.
And your crispness. How do you deal with that spectrum? Let's put it that way. That crispness may not always fit with your client.
It's a very different culture between the government and the commercial space, and they want different things, and we have to appeal in different ways. We're a really innovative firm, and sometimes that resonates with customers like Starbucks or Amazon. It doesn't resonate as much with the U.S. Army, but the Army's got other priorities like scale and security, and we've gotten to where we are by satisfying both constituencies.
So are you a genius? You're like some unbelievable child prodigy, and everybody at school thought, well, there's Matt Calkins. You know, he's just from another planet.
The word they would have used is nerd. Right? It wouldn't have been genius.
Is that what you were called back then?
I was a nerd.
And what was that like? You didn't care? It was a badge of honor?
I loved computers. I loved board games, and I write board games now. I published one last week. I liked nerdy things, and I still do. I love reading. I love books. I love history. I have a history group that visits and debates years in the past. It taught me that I don't care what's popular. It taught me to follow my own interests. And it taught me to care about details and numbers and things that are not necessarily cool but might make you a better professional.
Do you still write letters to your parents, to your siblings?
I have never been a good letter writer, unlike my mother.
You have a certain level of clarity. You seem to see everything very clearly. At least you express things that way. Is that something that comes naturally? Did you develop it? It's unique. And so I'm just curious as to when that level of clarity and description and how you see, and you apply to everything you do.
I think that people achieve what they value, and clarity is important to me. I read a great book a while ago about how the Greeks achieved, you know, classical Greeks achieved certain characteristics because they carved it into a statue, and you know, just like they achieved that, we achieve, you know, great basketball players. I can just tell you that it's important to me.
Well, why did you scale Mount Rainier?
I didn't scale it. I walked around it, and I walked around it because I loved a backpack and I love challenges. I like to find stress. I look for alternative outlets for creative energy and challenges to overcome.
The most stressful/creative thing you've ever done is what?
The most creative would probably be creating a board game about the Battle of Sekigahara, the War of Sekigahara, which in 1600 was fought in Japan and unified Japan for 260-odd years under the Tokugawa shogunate. That was published recently by GMT Games, which is the world's leading board game publisher, and I'm very proud of that game. It was intensely creative, and I went through years of iterations. It's been 10 years to write that game, and I feel like it's not only a fun thing to play, but it's a window in history. It's a teaching tool, and it unifies some of the hobbies that I enjoy most. I'm very competitive. I love games, and I love history, so putting that together was a pleasure.
Who in your life can keep up with you intellectually and creatively.
I'm surrounded by people that I can learn from and that do things that I wish I could do. And I mean, from my family, my wife and children, to the people I work with who are extraordinary, I feel blessed with the people that I work with.
What do Mom and Dad think about the way you've created a life for yourself?
I think we're still wonderfully close. I visit them whenever I can, and we have a very warm homecoming, and my siblings and I are the same but so different, and it's still a wonderful family, and I'm pleased to replicate that, kind of inspired by them in my own family.
If there was just one thing you would like to be known for in your life, what would it be?
I think the highest calling would be to understand the world around you and find a way to relate that truth to your fellow people.
Well said. Would you give us the web address for Appian Corporation, please?
It is appian.com, and that's spelled A-P-P-I-A-N. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Matt. We've been speaking with Matt Calkins, founder and CEO of Appian Corporation. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Michael Ankuma of Bank of America and Ed Alera of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is...
Erin Munley.
Erin, who are you with?
The Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce.
And you're here to talk about a special event, is that right?
Right. Our Education Foundation is hosting a very fun and special event on August 30th. It's a karaoke event, Charity Karaoke for Education.
And who should be involved in this event?
It's a really great opportunity for anyone in Fairfax County to come out to support our public school system.
And they will have to do what exactly?
Well, no one will have to do anything, but attendees at the event will certainly have an opportunity to go up on stage to sing a karaoke song to raise money for education.
So tell us how the money-raising part of this works.
Well, you'll come to the event and you'll volunteer as a singer, and then what we'll do is members of the business community will bid to send you up on stage, and their donations will go straight to Fairfax County Public Schools.
And who gets to pick the songs?
The singers are allowed to pick their songs, or if they allow the bidders to pick the songs, then that would be fine, too.
Have you ever done an event like this before?
We really haven't, and it's the only one in our area this summer, so we really encourage everyone to come out.
So you said it's for the Fairfax County Public Schools. Tell us why that's such a good cause.
Well, businesses really work hand-in-hand with education. The folks that are educating our students today are building our future workforce of tomorrow. So as a business community, it's our responsibility to support our public schools.
So if someone wanted to get involved and sing at this event, how do they learn more? How do they get signed up?
It's very easy, Mike. Just go to our website, www.fairfaxchamber.org, on the homepage.
And give us again the date, et cetera.
It is on Tuesday, August 30th from 6 to 9, Westwood Country Club on their pool deck.
We've been speaking with Erin Munley of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, Michael Ankuma of the Bank of America and Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. And I'd like to introduce you to our next guest, Scott Gassay. Scott is the founder and CEO of FGM. Welcome, Scott. And what is FGM?
FGM is a software development company. We help our national security clients exploit their most valuable asset, information, across the entire spectrum of information protection, information sharing, and information exploitation.
Well, what does information exploitation mean?
Information exploitation is basically how do we leverage all this information that we've gathered over the years from any organization. Quite frankly, in the intelligence community, there's no problem with the amount of information they have. It's how do they find those golden nuggets of intelligence within all those terabytes of information.
And you help them do that with software.
That's correct.
How?
Through a number of means. One application we have is a complex event processing capability that takes in basically terabytes of data in near real time and looks for connections, if you will, or basically different relationships that may not be obvious to the human eye, and create alerts based on that.
Wow, that's interesting. So you had talked about a humanitarian organization.
Correct.
Which would serve as an example. Tell us about it.
Right. In the area of the Geneva Center for Humanitarian Demining, we've developed an application which is based on geographic information systems technology. And What we've done there is created an application that is being deployed throughout the world. Just recently, we've deployed this capability in Cambodia, and it's basically an application that can run on fairly low-end laptops and PCs because, frankly, in these countries, they don't have the means to buy high-end computer equipment, and help them track minefields that are in these countries and the threat that's out there for the indigenous personnel.
So in other words, you take complex, in this example, complex information on something as simple as a laptop so people don't step on mines and get blown up.
That's correct.
That's amazing. That's important work. Thank you for doing it. How big or small is
FGM? The company is 200 people, primarily a company of software engineers.
Yeah. And you've been around for how long?
I founded the company in 1987, so we're celebrating our 24th anniversary this summer.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why did you do that? Tell us the story.
When we started the company in 1987, I was working for another firm doing similar type of work in the software field, basically command and control systems for both the Navy and the Air Force. And I think the tipping point for me in starting the company was one weekend, myself and some of my colleagues were working basically all-nighters, which we could do at the age of 24. And while we were doing that, the lab we were working in was next to the executive suite, and we were using the coffee machine there to keep us up throughout the hours. Mm-hmm. We finished the deployment. We got all the mag tapes in those days ready to go and shipped out to Hawaii. And the next morning we came in on Monday. I recall that there was a memo on my desk stating that the software engineers were no longer allowed to use the coffee machine because we did not turn it off, and it blew up and created a mess. But there was never any acknowledgement for the effort that we put in completing the customer's mission.
So, Scott, how did that experience translate into how you recognize effort or good work for your employees currently? Give us an example.
Right. For us, it's, you know, first and foremost, our business is about relationships for our employees and our customers. And what we've tried to do throughout the years is it's really important to recognize effort and achievement at the time it's done. And we've created both a bonus and reward program where we publicly recognize employees for performance through their peers, through both, you know, financial terms, but it's more than just the money. It's also that recognition across the company and through the leadership of the company.
Publicly how?
Publicly how? We have staff meetings where we will call people up with their peers and just say, hey, you know, Joe, you know, worked all weekend, solved a tough problem, allowed us to achieve the objective that we had and help the customer.
You have a mathematical background, and you were obviously technically competent. But why did you have the courage to start the business? Those are different skills.
Right. I think it goes back a long way for me. As a, you know, as a kid, you know, my parents were fairly young. In fact, they were 19 when I was born, and my father, throughout my childhood, went on and pursued and got his bachelor's degree, his master's degree, and ultimately pursued his PhD at George Washington University. So I think in one regard, I had a strong work ethic. And as I grew up, and you know, my father's a school teacher, we didn't have a lot of money. So if I wanted something, I went out and worked for it and earned it. So from the time I was 7 years old, I had paper routes, lawn mowing businesses. We even went out and collect bottles to earn money. So it was kind of always in my DNA to go out and, you know, do what it took to do business.
Growing up when your father was putting himself through all that school, did you know why? Did you have the same vision? Did you catch the vision that he had?
I saw the hard work, and I you know, he was there, you know, at home, you know, at the dinner table, you know, doing his reports and doing his writing. He still found the time to spend with us and take the time. And in fact, as an education major, a lot of times I was a guinea pig on a lot of the testing he was doing, different, you know, aptitude tests and so on. But yeah, I saw that work ethic, and I respected him for doing it.
So we attach the value of work ethic to your dad. What value would you attach to your mom?
You know, my mom grew up, I guess, in a fairly, I would say, a poor family, and I think I learned the, you know, some value in thriftiness, I would say, from my mom. You know, the value of what you earn and how important that is, and I think in some ways what instilled me is you never know what tomorrow may bring. So always, you know, prepare yourself that you may, you know, it may not always be good as good tomorrow as it is today.
Are your original founders still with the company?
Yeah. Myself, Mike Morehouse, and Mike Forty are started the company. We were all working at this other firm together in the mid-'80s. And we're all, after 24 years, we're all still working there in various capacities. I'm the CEO and basically run the company from a strategic and operational perspective. Mike Forty is stuck. Stuck is not the right word, but he is pursuing mainly on the technology side. He stayed in the technology career path. He's doing a lot of our higher-end software development. In fact, I talked about complex event processing. He's actually running that program for us, supporting a customer in Charlottesville. And then Mike Morehouse, my other partner, his focus is business development. He's very much the salesman in the team.
Yeah. Let's come back to your mom, if we can go back to your mom for a moment. She graduated number one in her high school class.
That's correct.
What important work did she do with her life?
She raised me and my sister. She really didn't pursue she did not pursue a college education. Unfortunately, you know, having children at a young age, her commitment was to raise the family, and I think she did an excellent job at it.
Well, what sort of impact did that have, knowing that she could have had a very successful career outside the home, but chose to have a successful career inside the home?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think for me, you know, my mom, you know, she was there when my dad was, you know, doing school and so on. She was there to, you know, keep me in line. Not that I was a troublemaker, but she kept me in line. She helped me a lot with my academic pursuits. She was obviously very bright. She was a great influence on both me and my sister to, you know, pursue education.
Yeah. Tell us about Hog Day at the meatpacking plant.
Well, in college, one of the things I did to help, you know, pay my way was I worked at a meatpacking plant in Timberville, Virginia. And every Saturday was what we would call Hog Day. Most other days were we would do cows and beef. So Saturday mornings we would load the trucks up with hogs. And what was interesting for me at that time is I was the one, you know, young man who was in college, and the other folks I worked with were all either from West Virginia or rural Virginia. And I'd say the majority of them lived around the meatpacking plant in mobile homes, whether they were 18 years old, 30 years old, or 50 years old. What I recall one day while we were loading hogs is one of my colleagues on the loading dock went to our foreman and asked if he could leave an hour early, and the foreman asked why, and he said, "Well, I'm getting married at noon, and I need to get to the chapel." That struck me, and I talked to him about it a little bit, and I found out that, you know, he was 18 at the time, and his bride-to-be was 16 years old, and it struck me as, wow, it's not where I come from or not what I aspire to, but I understood that this is a situation that these young folks were in and that their future, unfortunately, was really focused on continuing to work in this meatpacking plant and living in the mobile homes around the meatpacking plant.
Yeah.
Besides mom and dad, you had what I would say these three phases: the college phase, the first company you worked with, and the events there that triggered your starting your own enterprise a few years after that. Any significant role models in either college, in the first company, and so far, even outside of your company, that you have?
Right. One role model that's really sticks out for me was in the company that I was talking about with the accident with the coffee machine. And, you know, this was prior to the management change over there, but there was a man there by the name of Robert Feely, who was he was a vice president of the company, and we reported to him on our team. Bob was a retired Army colonel, served in Vietnam as a Green Beret, and then worked in the White House administration as director of White House communications. What I saw in Bob Feely was a leadership style, beyond the courage and the bravery that he had as a military man. He taught us all about leadership. It was how it was important that, you know, he would never ask us to do anything that he wouldn't do. So when we worked a lot of late nights, came in on Saturday, even though he wasn't in the trenches necessarily developing code, he was there with us, helping us, asking questions, and really cared about, you know, how we were doing and the mission at hand. One of the things with Bob that I learned too is that, you know, one of the things in leadership is how you can take a team of people, and I don't want to say average people, but average or above average people, and allow them to be way above that and to be excellent.
Scott, give us the web address for FGM, please.
The web address is www.fgm.com.
Pretty simple and straightforward. Thank you. We've been speaking with Scott Gassay. Scott's the founder and CEO of FGM. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Michael Ancuma of Bank of America and Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is?
Ernest Foreman.
Ernest, who are you with?
I'm with the George Washington University.
And you do what exactly for the George Washington University?
I'm a professor, and I teach in the project management program.
And you're here to talk about that program, is that right?
That's correct.
Tell us about it.
Well, the project management program at GW is one of the first project management programs in a business school. It has two distinguishing characteristics. One is it teaches generalized project management, not for specific industries such as the airline industry or construction industry. Another distinguishing characteristic is that we have an online component of the program, which is one of the first online project management programs, that is indistinguishable in content from the on-campus program. So the students that take the courses on campus or online have the same material. In fact, some students even alternate between on-campus and online.
Is there something significant about offering a general rather than specific to the industry project management program?
Well, the underlying theory and methodology of project management pertains to any type of industry. And so the students learn more about these other industries, which help them think more about their own industry and also gives them more flexibility in job opportunities in the future.
In a few seconds, the ideal candidate for this program would be whom?
Somebody who has a bachelor's degree. The person may or may not already be in project management, but would like to learn more about project management and perhaps consider it as a career.
Give us the web address, please.
The web address is gw.edu, and if you click on the business school, then you'll find the project management program.
And this has been your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Michael Ancuma of the Bank of America. And I am thrilled to introduce you to our final guest today, Amanda Hollins. Amanda is the co-founder, president, and CEO of Constellation Software Engineering. Welcome, Amanda, and what is Constellation Software Engineering?
Constellation Software Engineering provides engineering solutions to program-level support. So,
to the layman, that means?
To the layman, that means we do requirements management, software integrations. We bring people together to talk to each other that may not be talking to each other otherwise.
Can you give us an example of people that aren't talking to each other that you've brought together?
A good example of that is the Emergency Operations Centers. A project that we've been working on is getting cross-jurisdictional communication to happen between different cities, different jurisdictions, different divisions.
So if a child is missing or there's something that happens in terms of a crime, what happens as a result of the work you do?
It's more of if a natural disaster happens, for example. If there's an earthquake, if there's a volcano, if there's a major event like 9/11,
yes.
That involves jurisdictions next to each other. Currently, they're not talking. What we're doing is developing a piece of software that gives a visual picture, common operating picture for each of these jurisdictions to see what's going on so they don't have to use traditional communication that may not be available.
How did you think up an idea to do that?
The need. 9/11 really sparked that need. New York City and D.C. weren't really talking to each other necessarily, except by traditional means. And there was no way for D.C. to be able to see in a common operating picture visually. When I say visually, I mean a actual picture of what was going on. So that sparked that need.
So you were watching the coverage on the news and the idea hit you?
It was a DHS requirement that was pushed down through contracts. So because we were doing software integrations, that's where they came to us and said, hey, we got this great idea. We have these other partners that are working on these other things. Can you come help us?
Well, why is this so important, such important work to you?
To me personally?
Yes.
It makes a difference in people's lives. It's not just busy work for the sake of work. It's truly you're making a difference in the world.
Yeah. Thank you for making that difference. How big or small?
We are 34 people.
And you have been around, the company's been around for how long?
Company's been around since 2002.
Okay, and you are a co-founder, so what compelled you to start a company? I mean, you've talked a little bit about why it's important work, but what is it about you, you know, personally that compelled you to start a company?
I saw the bigger companies working, and they do a good job at what they do, but I don't think that, I didn't feel like they were really meeting the individual needs. They weren't giving people purpose, and they weren't giving people reason to get up in the morning. And we felt that the projects that we would be working on, we could do a better job of really motivating people to love their work, to make a difference.
Does this have something to do with Let My People Go Surfing?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it does.
Okay, tell us more.
I was privileged enough to be given a copy of, we had started the company at that point, so, and deep down inside I knew that there had to be a different way, and I read the book by Yvon Chouinard, Let My People Go Surfing, and it really, he was doing what he loved, and he cared about people, and he was making a difference in their lives through what he was doing. And
You're trained as an accountant, so you have really hardcore numbers background. This is totally antithetical to your background.
It was
epiphanal, if you will.
I guess it just all rolls back to the fact that I, having been in bigger organizations, I never felt like I had purpose. There was a job to do, and you got the job done, and your only reward was your paycheck. There wasn't that inner drive of I'm making a difference.
Yeah. Tell us about Granddad.
My grandfather. He was a wonderful man. He owned multiple companies in his lifetime. He had a third grade education, was born to a coal mining family, and they had nothing. He had many, many brothers and sisters, and he built multiple businesses from absolutely nothing. He had an intuition that to his dying day, I still couldn't get to him to explain. And that was, just watching him was fascinating.
So you did watch him. You didn't learn about Granddad through stories. You actually...
Oh, no.
Give us an example.
He would take me to horse shows, and he bought and sold horses, and he would look at the babies, and there was something about a horse that he would want. He would look at five different babies and go, no, none of them. And then he would see this one, and it was just, there was something that he saw in this horse, and it would turn out to be absolutely amazing. And he did the same thing with businesses. He would go into a business that was failing, had absolutely nothing going for it, and see a spark of something in it and turn it around, and it fascinated me.
Well, what did Granddad see in you as a young girl?
I think it was the the spirit of independence. And if you tell me not to do something, which got me into a lot of trouble, tell me not to do something, my first response was, oh, really? Watch me. And just that, the love of a challenge. And he saw that in me, so he would challenge me with, all right, I need for you to go clean five stalls in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
can get it done.
I'm sorry for interrupting. You were with your granddad when he died.
Yes.
What did you say to him, or what were you wishing you could say to him?
I just thanked him for being willing to... I don't know how many times I would go to him and just ask him questions. You know, we have this issue or this thing has come up. What do you think? You know, how would you handle this? What do you see in this situation that maybe I'm missing? And on his deathbed, it was just a thank you so much for spending that time with me and being willing. And no, don't go yet. I'm not done.
So Amanda, are you? You mentioned Grandpa. You felt you still needed to ask some more questions where Grandpa was concerned. Are you still in pursuit of that elusive instinct that you think Grandpa had? Is that a driver in what you do?
That
or how you do it?
Learning to trust that has been a huge challenge for me, and I've had multiple people, both mentors, business associates, and family members, tell me, Amy, you're dead on. Why are you doubting yourself? And so, yes, that I have that pursuit is continuing.
Well, you mentioned that you grew up in a family that valued education, at least for certain members. Tell us a little bit about that.
My brother and my male cousins were all given privileges that the females amongst us were not necessarily given.
Such as?
Education, vehicles, business opportunities, even undeserving.
They wouldn't even let you take the SAT?
Right. When I was a senior in high school, he didn't want to let me off of work to take the SATs.
So what did you do?
Well, I enter my strong-willed mom. She absolutely demanded and went to the gas station and, you know, went in, took me out. You're taking the SAT whether you like it or not, and they backed down.
Yeah.
So that was the day that I learned that, wow, women can be strong-willed. Look at her go.
Tell us a little bit more about Dad. What was he like?
Unfortunately, my dad was a substance user, very codependent on my grandfather, didn't trust his own instincts, wasn't very good at standing up for himself or standing up for people who were around him. So I don't want to call him spineless, but it wasn't a very good role model.
So how is it that you turned out the way you did?
I think just having to be independent at a very early age produced a drive in me that I didn't like to be told what to do. And I thought, even when I was told what to do, I needed to know why. Why am I doing this? What is the ultimate goal? Because maybe there's a better way.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me ask you a somewhat different question. We're almost out of time. Your daughter Zoe is here in the studio, and she's
yes.
listening to the interview. What sort of mark would you like to leave on her life, or what sort of legacy would you like to give her?
I would love for her to pursue something that makes her feel like she's made a difference. Leaving the legacy of a company that cares about people, a company that cares about the work that they're doing, and a company yeah. that's made a difference in the projects that, whether it be a requirements management project or some other kind of project, we walk away from that project, and that project is in a much better place than when we started.
Yeah.
So just making a difference.
If there was some supernatural way for to have your grandfather at your deathbed, what do you think he would say to you, his last words to you before you passed on?
I think that he would say to me, thank you for not giving up. Good job for keeping on. Good job for being patient. Good job for persevering through what could have been a very nasty bunch of situations.
Yeah. Congratulations. Would you please give us the web address for Constellation Software Engineering?
Sure. We're at www.cse-corp.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Amanda. We've been speaking with Amanda Hollins, co-founder, president, and chief financial officer for Constellation Software Engineering. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Debbie Ritchie and Paul McQuillan. Debbie's the chief financial officer. Paul is the executive vice president for business development of a company called AT Solutions. We've also had Matt Calkins, founder and CEO of Appian Corporation, on the show today. I'd also like to thank Scott Gassay. Scott's the founder and CEO of FGM. And, of course, most recently, Amanda Hollins, co-founder, president, and chief financial officer of Constellation Software Engineering. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Michael Nkuma of Bank of America and Ed Alera of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, for helping me with the interviews. More than anyone, I'd like to thank you, our listening audience. If it were not for you, we would not even have a radio show. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We have been broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. Thank you so very much for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.